saw that look. I think I'm in chapter 26 anyways. And we're going to be reading about Isaac and Rebecca. And they're going to go on a little journey over in the land of the Philistines a little bit around Gerar. And they're going to play with another guy named Abimelech. And we're going to get to all that in a few minutes. So we'll get started. And I am certainly glad y'all are all here for. I don't want to get started without telling y'all I'm glad y'all are here. And there was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. So we see that there's another famine in the land. And it looks like Isaac's planning to travel maybe farther than he ought to, and the Lord's going to sort of talk to him and say, don't go any farther than where you're at. Stay in the land of Gerar. Stay in the land there. Don't go out of that land. But it says there's another famine. So when we look at this thing, the first famine was nearly about 100 years ago. You say, why do you keep up with all that? Because it keeps us in perspective. Abraham was during a famine, and Abraham has already passed off the scene. So this can't be the same famine. It's one that happened about 100 years back. And this Abimelech is also can't be the same Abimelech that Abraham talked to, because we're looking at the word Abimelech maybe meaning king or ruler or something of that of the Philistines. It wasn't actually a name, but it was a title. Or possibly a son, if it was Abimelech and it was his true name, then maybe it was the son of the first Abimelech. So we see here that Isaac has run into another Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. And the Lord appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt. In other words, you've gone far enough. Stop right here. I know the famine's bad and all that where you were back at Beersheba, but don't go no farther than this land of the Philistines. Stay right here. Do not cross over and go into Egypt. The Lord directed him, showed up and told him, says, you don't go into Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. So somewhere in the land of Philistia, the Philistines' land, he says, I'm going to show you a place. You go put up your tent. You go settle down. Park your wagon. Don't go no farther. And when the famine's over and stuff's over, then we'll take care of that business. So he says, sojourn in this land and I will be with thee. In other words, if you want my protection, stay where you're at. If you want my protection, I'll be with you, but you're going to stay out of Egypt. I will be with thee and unto thy seed, and I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham, your father. In other words, I promised your father Abraham some things that's going to take place in the future. And if you'll just stay by me and do these things, that same promise, not because you do the things, but that same promise is on you also, that the things I promised your father Abraham, I have also made a promise to you. I swear unto Abraham thy father, and I will make thy seed to multiply, talking about him and his seed, as the stars of heaven, and I will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. He says, look, Isaac, you're in the bloodline of Abraham. There's something going to take place in that bloodline. I made a promise to your father, and I have also made a promise to you, the same promise, talking about the Messiah that will come one day. These promises are sure. These promises are steadfast. And you will bless all the earth with what I have promised you with. And you will multiply and be a great nation. If you think about that now, he has two sons, Jacob and Esau. Both of them became, Esau became a duke over 12, or father over 12 dukes, which is a pretty good pile of folks. And Jacob became the patriarch of 12 brethren. So right off the bat, these promises are already kicking in. He's multiplying them already. He says, look, I'm already taking care of these things. It's already going on. And Isaac dwelt in Gerar. That's the same place where Abraham dwelt way back yonder 100 years back. And Isaac dwelt in Gerar. And the men of the place asked him of his wife. And he said, she is my sister, for fear to say she is my wife, lest he said, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, and because she was fair to look upon. So we see here that Rebekah still hasn't lost her beauty. We know they've been married over 40 years. Now, we don't know exactly how old she was. Some people say about 14. I think she's probably a little older than that. But she's probably 50-something years old, and she's still good-looking. And she still looks good to those other guys. And they ask him about her, and he was afraid for himself that because of her beauty, because she was good to look upon, that they might kill him. So he did the same thing his father did. If you remember, the same thing with Sarah. He says, she's my sister. Now you say, but with Abraham, that was a truth. Sort of a close sister, half sister, part sister there. But with Isaac and Rebekah, that's a total lie. She's a cousin. She's a close cousin, but she's still a cousin. She's not a sister or a half sister from a father's mother married to another mother. She's a cousin. So he told a lie, a good one. And he told the lie because he didn't want to die. Now, it looked like these men, they might not want to commit adultery, maybe, but they sure didn't mind killing somebody for their wife, or they sure didn't mind having fornication and then going back to their own business. So it says, it looks like for his safety, he says, she's my sister. And then it came to pass, when he had been in the land a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. Now, sporting means that they were having a good time together. They were maybe possibly kissing. They might have been possibly holding hands. They might have been possibly running around the house, giggling and laughing and doing what man and wife would do. But whatever sporting means, this Abimelech fellow says, wait a minute. For sure, she ain't your sister. You are not acting like somebody would act with your sister. You're acting more like somebody would act with your wife. So Abimelech says, he saw them sporting. He saw them having fun. He saw them holding hands, possibly kissing, maybe some other things. We don't know, but they were having a good time together. And Abimelech happened to look out the window. I don't think he was spying and said, well, let me see what they're doing today. But I think he just happened to raise his curtains up, look outside, and says, look at those two. They're running and jumping and playing and having a good old time. But whoops, I thought she was his sister. I thought she was, you know, they don't act like they're sisters and brothers. They act like maybe they're married folks. And so Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety, she's your wife. In other words, all you're playing around has showed us what you are, who you really are. So of a surety, she is your wife, and thou saidest, she's your sister. And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. Now, he didn't tell anybody else around there that, but that's what he thought in his heart. That's what he believed in his mind. He says, I might have to die for her if she's my wife. These guys might kill me to take her. These guys, even Abimelech might even kill me, because remember in the last one, Abimelech is the one who liked Sarah. And I'm sure this king, before he would let this lady go, he kind of had his eye on her too, because that's what guys do sometimes. And he says, I thought if I told you the truth, somebody around here would kill me. Somebody around here would take my life, because y'all don't have any problem taking somebody for a wife after the husband is dead or murdered or whatever. In fact, it don't look like they have a problem murdering. They have a problem with adultery, but they don't have a problem with murder. It's funny how some of the commentators got that across there. And Abimelech said, what is this that thou hast done to us? One of the people might lightly have lain with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought guiltiness upon us. In other words, because of your lie, somebody might have just went up and laid with her. That would have been bad. He would have been committing adultery, and he would have been done it innocently, because he thought she was your sister. So because of his lie, there had been a possibility that some adultery could have took place. He said someone might have lied with her and been guilty. And Abimelech's probably thinking of himself. He says, I might have accidentally just did that. And now look where you'd have put me on the spot. I'd have been, look what you'd have done to me, because I would have committed an adultery here. He says, why did you do this to us? And Abimelech charged all the people, saying, he that toucheth this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. In other words, he says, wait a minute. For a surety, they're married. For a surety, they're husband and wife. So let's stop all the shenanigans and everything going on, somebody doing something wrong. So he says, any man that touches him or her shall be put to death. Now that sort of puts them a step above anybody else in the whole village or the whole countryside, because they have the protection of the king. Now, that being said, the people around about started saying, who in the world are they? Why do they get this protection? Why do they get this support? Why is the king so good to them, going to keep us from doing what we had on our mind or what he had on his mind? But the king says, whoever touches him or her will be surely put to death. Then Isaac sowed. So there's no telling how long he's been here, but we know he's been here long enough that maybe the famine's about wore out, because he's going to plant and sow. He's going to plant some seed. And it says, and Isaac sowed in that land and received the same year 100-fold. And the Lord blessed him. In other words, for every bushel he put in the ground, he got 100 bushels back, if I count right. 100-fold, right? So if he planted a whole acre of land, he got 100 acres worth of crops off of it. Now you bet you that those people were looking at him saying, look at the way his field is producing. Look at the way his crops have come in. Look at the amount of money. He's sitting here in our land, getting rich off our land, in the same dirt we're planting in, and we're barely getting sprigs to pop up. And he's getting bushel after bushel. Talk about jealousy kicking in right there, huh? Look at what's happening to this guy. Look what's going on with this man. He is getting blessed and blessed and blessed. And he's getting blessed because of the grace of God. Not because he's super duper or whatever, but because God gives grace and God blesses his people. It says here, and Isaac received in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. Now, we understand that he came there already with a lot of stuff. Abraham was rich. Abraham gave everything he had to Isaac. Now, Abraham, many herds, and we don't know how many herds it was, but we know it was herds with an S, and we know it was flocks with an S. And so if he came there with all these things, and the Lord is multiplying him like he did that crop, because to feed all that stuff, he'd have to have a serious crop. He'd have to have some serious pastures. He'd have to have some serious water. He'd have to have some serious stuff going on. And for this man to keep multiplying and multiplying and multiplying had to be a great sight to all these folks, because they're seeing the work of God happening right in their face, right in front of them. And the man became very, not just a little great, but very great. In other words, they were looking at him like he is some kind of rich guy. He's some kind of important guy. He's somebody, because God just keeps blessing him. For he had possessions of flocks with an S, and possessions of herds with an S, and great store of servants. He didn't just have animals and crops. He had people to go watered animals, people to go feed the animals, people to go plant the gardens, people to go plant the crops, people to go bring the crops in, people to put barns up and store the crops. He had great amount of servants. He was almost a country to himself. He was almost a kingdom to himself. That's how many folks he had. And that's going to make these folks a little bit nervous here. We're going to see that in a little while. Because he was so great and because he was so wealthy. For all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham, his father, the Philistines, had stopped them and filled them with earth. Here we are. This man is multiplying and growing, and he's doing it all by the grace of God, because the water holes that his daddy dug, the Philistines were so jealous. The Philistines were so upset with him. The Philistines were so angry with him that they didn't want him to prosper, they filled all the water wells up. Now, how do you feed animals without water? You can't. How do you grow crops without water? You can't. So this stuff was happening in spite of them stopping up all the wells. In spite of them saying, we're going to do everything we can. We won't touch him. We won't mess with his wife. We won't mess with his folks. But we're going to do everything we can to make sure he can't prosper. And he's still prospering and prospering and prospering. It says, in the days of Abraham, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with the earth. And Abimelech said unto Isaac, go from us. Abimelech says, go from us. In other words, look, we haven't touched you. We haven't messed with you. But you're getting to be so big, we can't even support you in our country. All your stuff is out eating and out grazing and out doing all of our stuff. How about you just leave? Go back where you come from. Go somewhere. Just pack your toys and get out of here. He says, and Abimelech said unto him, go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. You're scaring us to death. In other words, we understand that you're kind of a gentle guy, but yet you have more servants than I got. You got more stuff than I got. You got more animals than I got. You got like almost a small country going with you, and you have already outgrown me and my kingdom. And I think I'm trying to remember, but there's another person in the Bible that did the same thing. He got bigger than the people around him, and they says, look, you got to go. But he says, go from us because you are mighty. Go from us because you are bigger. Go from us because you are outnumbering us and scaring us, because now we know that we've picked at you. We've stopped up things. We've messed with your wells. We've messed with your water. We've even maybe eyeballed your wife. Would you please leave before you remember all the stuff we've done to you, get mad, and come whip us? Then it says, and Isaac digged again wells of water. He needed these wells. He had to do it. Wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham, his father, for all the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham. And he called their names after the names in which his father had called them. In other words, all these wells had a name at one time. He went and redug them, reestablished them, got them re-going, named them all after the names that his father had given them. And Isaac's servant and he given them, and Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water, which means this thing was flowing and good and fresh, and wow, it was some kind of fabulous water. And then it says, after he finds this fabulous well in the valley, that the herdman of Gera did strive with Isaac's herdman, saying, the water is ours. So he moved a little bit, but he didn't move quite out of the land of Gera, quite out of the land of the Philistines. He moved almost out. So he couldn't argue with these people about it being their water, even though his people dug it. He says, the herdman of Gera did strive with Isaac, the herdman saying, the water is ours. And he called the name of the well Essek, because they strove with him. The word Essek means contention or striving or violence was taking place. He said he named the well of springing water Essek because there was much contention. That would have been a well to fight over. That would have been a well to get a hold of. It says, and he just loaded up, and he moved a little farther on down the road, but he still didn't quite get out of the land of the Philistines. And they digged another well, and they strove for that also, and he called the name of it Sitna. And Sitna means hatred. These people were doing their very best to antagonize Isaac, to make him leave, to show him that they had contention, and not only contention, but hatred for this man because of all the things that God was doing for him. And that's the same thing that happens to Christians. People outside the church get angry with Christians because God's blessing them and God's taking care of things. But he says this well was called Sitna, which means, and that's the same root word, if I'm not mistaken, that Satan comes from. So there's a great hatred going on there. You good Bible scholars can look that up and straighten me out later. It says, and he removed from thence. So he loaded up again. You see this man? Isaac was a very mellow, I don't know if mellow is the right word, but a very non-confrontal, mild-mannered guy. Because you would think that with all the whales being stopped up, that would have made him angry. You would have thought with them stopping up the well of living water and taking it away from him, that would have made him angry. You would have thought when he dug this next well, he'd have been far enough away, but they still stopped it up. And yet, instead of wanting to fight, now if you remember Abraham, he had 300 fighting guys with him. I mean, just at the back of your head, you could bet that Isaac had them same 300 or another 300 about like them that walked around with him. Instead of fighting, he just loaded up and eased on down the road. Made more room and made more room and made more room. Sounds kind of like Lot and Abraham when they were together. Lot went one way and Abraham went the other. That's who I was trying to think of a while ago. One's land was way bigger than the other and they couldn't feed it, so one they separated. It says, and they digged another well and strove for it, and the name of it was Sitna. And they moved from thence and digged another well, and for that they strove not. In other words, they finally got far enough out of the township or out away from Abimelech and his folks. They got far enough away, they says, well, now they're out of our hair. We'll let them have their land. We'll let them have their well. We'll let them have the stuff that's going on. We'll let them take care of these things. He says, and they moved and thence, and they digged another well, and for that they strove not. And he called the name of it Rehoboth. And he said, for now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. So he sits here and he's praising God. He's worshiping God. He's thinking about being fruitful in the land. He's thinking about all the things that God has moved him to. And we don't think about that when God's moving us to a good spot. Sometimes we go through a well digging and a well digging and a well digging. And then finally we get to a place and God gives us that peace we've been looking for and lets us spread out a little bit. And our lives are the very same way. Sometimes we go through a little contention. Sometimes we go through maybe some even hatred a little bit. And then God moves us to the place where we can have a little bit of peace and settle down. All these things take place in our lives as we go through our lives. It says, in Rehoboth, and the Lord hath made room for us. Wouldn't it be when we get to the place where the Lord has made room for us, when it's going to be a very great day when we get to that place called heaven and all those things. And the Lord has made room for us, and we have been fruitful in the land. And then he went up thence into Beersheba. So he hadn't went very far. This man lived around Beersheba almost his whole life. He never went very, very far, 20, 30 miles this way, 20, 30 miles this way, but he always ends up at Beersheba. And he says that he's back at Beersheba, up thence to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared unto him. Wouldn't that be a great thing, that the Lord would sit down and talk with us and show us some things and point some things out, because we got the word here, but I mean, he actually sat down and talked with Isaac, or appeared to Isaac. Just like he appeared to his father Abraham. He says, and the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham and of thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed of thy servant for Abraham's sake. Now, Abraham was saved by grace, not because of works or whatever. And because of the promise that he made for Abraham, he's going to do the same thing for Isaac. But right now we see here that he says, I am the God of Abraham, thy father. Now Abraham's dead. But we remember Matthew says, God is not the God of the dead. He's the God of the living. He's the God of Abraham. He's the God of Isaac. He's the God of Jacob. So we see these folks as being dead in the flesh, but they're alive in the spirit. They're alive in the souls. So he says here, I am the God of Abraham. It's not I was or I used to be the God of Abraham. He's past, he's gone. He's just, I still am the God of Abraham. I still am your God. I still am the one who is only God. And he says, and I will bless thee and multiply thy seed and for my servant Abraham's sake. So he says, because I promised him the very same promise I placed on him, the very same thing I told him I would do is the very same thing I'm going to do for you all the way until Messiah comes. And then even all the way until the church goes out of here. It says, I will keep these promises for his sake. And when he says for his sake, it's because God makes promises. He don't go back on them. God didn't do these things because Abraham was the best man in town. And we can already see Isaac wasn't the best man in town, because he did have a little storytelling ability there sometime. But we see here, God blesses people because he makes promises. And he keeps promises, and he never goes back on them. He says, I am the God of Abraham. Then he says, and he builded there an altar there, and he called the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants digged a well. It says here, after God talked to him, he says, after God had talked with him, after God explained to him again who he was and what he was and what the promises were, he built there an altar. And he called upon the name of the Lord. In other words, he set him up a prayer service. He says, look, the Lord appeared to me here. I'm going to build this altar. I'm going to come here and I'm going to praise God. I'm going to come here and I'm going to worship God. I'm going to thank God for all the things he's done. He took me all the way down into the Philistines' land. He brought me all the way back to Beersheba. I grew the whole time I was going. I multiplied the whole time I was growing. God has done nothing but bless me. I'm going to praise God. I'm going to worship God. I'm going to give God thanks for all that's going on. You say, you don't see that there. Well, it's there. It's there. When you build an altar, you're praising God. You're worshiping God. You're going to get down and do some things with God and say, man, that is my God. He wasn't a sort of God. He was his God. Then Abimelech. Boy, that Abimelech, he says, whoa, you reckon he's got spies following him around? Kind of seems like it, huh? Keep an eye on that boy. I know he's going to turn his mind, change his mind, come back and get us after a while. You keep an eye on him. Let me know if he's coming or not. It says, then Abimelech went to him from Gera, and Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of the army. Now we say, didn't that same Phicol guy, wasn't he the same guy that talked to Abraham? Not unless he's really, really, really old. But Phicol might have been the son of Phicol. Or maybe that might be a name for an office or a position in the army, because it says this guy was in the army or the captain of the army. So maybe it had something to do with his captainship or whatever. But undoubtedly, this man would have to be well over 100 years old if it's the same guy, because the last time he talked to Abraham was before he died. So it says, Abimelech went to him from Gera, and Ahaz, Zath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. So we got three guys going to see Isaac. And Isaac said unto them, wherefore come ye to see me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? In other words, look, I did what you said. Y'all kept stopping up the wells. You kept stopping up the water. I kept moving farther and farther and farther away. I never one time retaliated. I never one time got mad with you. I never one time tried to get back at you. So because you hate me, and I know you hate me, you haven't done anything but hate me, because every time I do something, you try to destroy it. Every time I dig a well, you cover it up. Every time I dig a well, you try to fight me over it, take it away from me. Everything I've done here lately, y'all tried to mess it up. You tried to ruin it. He says, and Isaac said to them, wherefore come ye to see me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? And they said, we saw certainly that the Lord was with thee. Wait a minute, the Lord's with you. If the Lord be for you, who can be against you? If the Lord is on your side, we got to look out. If the Lord is taking care of you, we won't stand a chance, remember? If the Lord is blessing you, if the Lord is with you, if the Lord is taking care of you, if you decide to turn on us, we are hopeless. We have no chance. He says, we see that the Lord was with thee, and we said, let there be now an oath between us, even between us and thee, let us make a covenant with thee. Didn't he already have a covenant with Abraham already for the same thing? That we wouldn't go mess with you and you wouldn't come mess with us for so many generations, up to the third or fourth generations? He says, let us make a covenant. Isaac should have just whooped out the paper and said, well, here it is. Remember? Your daddy did this one. And you didn't do my daddy that away. But you did me this away, and we did have a covenant. We did have a relationship. We did have a bond that says, you won't hurt me and I won't hurt you. But every time I tried to do something, everything I did, you tried to tear it up. But they said, let therefore be an oath between us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee, that thou wilt do us no hurt. That's kind of like Joseph's brothers after that Jacob died. And they says, look, we know that we did this badly. We know that we mistreated you. We know that we sold you into slavery. We know that we did all these bad things. But remember, Dad and y'all talked and you said you wouldn't do nothing. I just want to remind you, there's a covenant out there, Joseph. There's a covenant out there that you won't hurt us. And here it says here, betweenst us and thee, let us make a covenant with thee that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee. Well, physically, they didn't touch him. Physically, they didn't mess with him. Now, mentally, they probably was wearing him out with all the wells they were stopping up. He was going to dig him over. But they didn't steal none of his sheep. They didn't steal none of his cattle. They didn't burn down his crops. They didn't mess with his wife. So literally, they did not touch him. He says, hurt us not, because we have not touched thee, and as we have done unto thee nothing but good. Now, maybe Abimelech didn't know about a lot of the well covering up. Maybe that was just the land folks and the people out in the boondocks or whatever. He might not have known, but I have a suspicion he probably did. But it says here, we have done nothing but good. Wow, if I got that, if that's all good you're doing to me, I don't want to see what bad is. If you're trying to ruin my crops and fill up my water with mud and everything else, I don't want to see when you're mad at me. But he says, we have done thee nothing but good. Don't need no neighbors like that. And have sent thee away in peace. I know he left in peace. They didn't have no battle. They didn't have a war. But that ain't the kind of peace I want either. That kind of peace ain't no good. That kind of peace just drives you out of the land like a wedge. We keep stopping things up. Eventually, he'll just keep moving on and keep moving on and keep moving on. He says, we let you go in peace. I don't need no peace like that either. That wasn't a good peace. He says, we let you go in peace. Thou art now blessed of the Lord. Now, that part was right. You are blessed of the Lord. God be for you. Who can be against you? We know that we have put contention between us. We know that we have put hatred between us. We know that we have pushed you to the limit. And we know that God just keeps expanding you and growing you and building you and taking care of you. We know that we have went beyond what we should have done. And when instead of asking for forgiveness, they say, look, let's just let bygones be bygones. Just forget about it. We'll let you stay out here. You can have your crops. You can have your sheep. You can have your little altar there. You can worship your God all you want to. And we'll go back to our little place over here and we won't mess with you. Just don't mess with us. Because the Lord has blessed you. And he made them a feast. Now, he made them a feast. This man was been pushed and pushed and pushed to the end of his wits. And he turns around and does what God would do. He takes care of his enemies. He made them a feast. And they did eat and drink. In other words, this wasn't just a little old piece of chicken in a box. They had plenty of groceries out there spread out. And they had plenty of time. They sat down and leisurely ate and drank and partied and had a feast. And they rose up betimes in the morning. In other words, this party lasted pretty well all night. Betimes in the morning. And swear one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. So even though Isaac had all the reason in the world to be angry, he was a pretty peaceable kind of guy. He had enough servants, he probably could have put up a real good fight. He had enough food and all, he didn't have to worry about planting nothing to sustain him. He had the groceries, he had the animals, he had everything he needed, but he made a feast for the people who treated him badly. He made a feast, he fed them all night long, they did eat and they did drink, and then in the very next morning, he let them depart in peace. He let them go. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged, and said to him, "We have found water." Now wait a minute. While he's doing all this stuff, he never one time said, "Oh, Abimelech, oh, by the way, just around the corner over here, we're digging another well. We got this thing going on. Don't try to keep it a secret from you." But the very same day, while he's taking care of these people who are trying to make peace with him, his servants were out digging a well. He said, "And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged, and said unto him, 'We have found water.'" And I'm a guessing this was good water, sweet water, delicious water. He says, "We have found water." Now, we know he's up around Beersheba, so there was a well there already. Maybe there's another well beside there, because as he's being increased, just one well probably wasn't enough. So as he spread his herds out, he probably spread wells out all around for convenience of feeding and watering and crops and everything else. "We have found water." And he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. So we know there was a well at Beersheba, and now we found another well that's called Sheba, and that was at Beersheba unto this day. And then we step to the side, and we go back to the ranch, and we say, "And Esau..." It's just amazing how God just sticks stuff in places just from out of nowhere, it seemed like. "And Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Bera, the Hittite, and Bashemeth, the daughter of Elam, the Hittite." So we say here he was 40 years old when he found him two wives. So we know that this is a pretty good piece along here. So Esau was 40 years old. He married these two Hittites, which were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. Undoubtedly, Esau had paid enough attention to what happened from Abraham to Isaac. "Don't go get me a wife from the people of this land right here in Canaan." But he says, "Because I've lost my birthright, because this thing didn't go quite the way I wanted it to go, because I'm going to be a thorn in my daddy's side for a little while. I want to grieve my mom. I want to grieve my dad a little bit because things didn't go just quite my way. I'm going to marry me these two Hittites." Ain't that like a rebellious son to go bring home some floozy from somewhere just to prove a point or something? So it says here, and I don't know, I'm not trying to say they're floozies. They might have been great upstanding girls. I don't know, but they were Hittites. And they displeased Isaac. And they displeased Rebekah because they wanted to get some girls from back home. Some of them girls from Hur or Chaldea up there, somewhere in that neighborhood. Not from the land of Canaan, especially, and not from the Hittites round about, because those were heathens. They served false gods, they served idols, they served statues. And these things became a grief unto Isaac, and a grief under Rebekah. And that's what starts our story off pretty soon as to when they send Jacob away. First of all, so Rebekah doesn't have a son get killed by another son. And secondly, to have a wife from back at the home place. So, where we are here now is we have a well, we have a altar, we have Isaac and Rebekah at Beersheba. We have Esau making his mom and dad angry by marrying two Hittite girls. And next week, we'll go into another one and see just where we get.
Brother Neil, would you dismiss us, please?